Welcome to the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention Show. I'm your host, Eric L. Donovan, the Kingdom ROI Strategist. Families and businesses hire me to create, grow, and protect generational wealth by discovering that what they do in their family's living room matters more than what they do in their boardroom or advisor's conference room. On this show, I'm here to tell the stories of families and business owners who recognize that they didn't have a growth problem, they had a relationship and priority problem. We'll hear stories and the journey these families who recognize that business and financial growth weren't what mattered. They know that their relationships and priorities is what's going to determine their outcomes. So stick around to hear the hardships they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the wisdom they wish they would have known along the way. Each story captures the blessings and the struggles of pursuing return on intention instead of return on investment. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next 40 minutes where we take the world's broken mindsets and systems and turn them upside down. Everyone, welcome to the Return on Intention Show. It's another incredible day, and I've brought in another guest. A guest that matches my passion to advocate for families to grow and protect generational abundance for 100 plus years by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that can happen during your lifetime and beyond. And the guest today has lived with an understanding that to truly achieve abundance, it is not about the next business or financial strategy. It's about acknowledging that what we do in our living rooms matters more than what we do in any conference or boardroom. So as always, I'm excited to diving more into their story. So, and the story of their journey. So Mark Jackson, welcome to the show.
Absolutely outstanding. A joy to be here with you. I couldn't be more grateful, Eric. Thank you so very much for the opportunity to care, share, and prayerfully be a servant today.
Yeah, no. And you and I've had enough chance to visit. I know that that is going to be the case. Hey, would you tell my audience just a little bit about who you are in business, outside of business, and kind of just give them a rounded picture of the world of MJ.
There you go. Well, again, thank you so much for the opportunity to care and share. And, you know, originally from New Jersey, born in Philly, did the whole thing, education, just like your parents told you to. Went into the hospitality industry, which means I worked for Church's Chicken for a number of years coming out of college. And after getting robbed at gunpoint three times, I finally kind of woke up and said, you know, I need to do something different because I am worth more, as well as family, relations, stuff like that. But moved forward, went back to school, got a good education, jumped into the world of real estate appraisal, which is truly a divine intervention moment for me. And everything that has transpired over the last 24 years, 25 years now has been a result of that divine intervention moment, being able to touch lives in a different way, really help people grasp the concept of a valuation first approach to real estate. And we've done transactions in a number of different states throughout the country, but also have helped individuals in all 50 states, as well as the territories, do real estate and do it very, very well while building a wealth portfolio, building a legacy. And then we've learned so much for our family, how to not just be in a posture of transferring wealth, but really structuring entities to preserve it such that there can be that fifth, sixth generation that knows who great, great, great grandpa was.
Tell them about your wife and your kids. You're gonna get out of it.
Who would I be without them, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lovely bride. We do have a blended family. I did remarry. And so I have a son and two daughters. That just are absolutely phenomenal individuals, and married into another daughter and a son, and have really given the blessing of having lost my first family and not being in a position to go through the elementary, the middle school years, the college tours, all those things was such a life-giving experience and molded me in a unique and different way had I just continued to be on my own. We live in the Salt Lake City area. I tell folks that, you know, this is the city we never knew we wanted to live in. You see God's majesty in the mountains surrounding you. It is just a wonderful and splendid place for this season of our lives. And we're really pleased and glad to be here. But I do spend time in Puerto Rico as well. that little U.S. paradise. Son, oldest son served in the Air Force. Next daughter is a dentist and practices wonderfully, also teaches. Middle daughter does graphic design, is in the Seattle market. Youngest daughter actually is our staff accountant for the family business activity we do. And the youngest son did it all. Confirmation class, Eagle Scout, appointment to West Point. Went through that time and now is in the golf industry and doing really, really well. So all the children are in their different market areas, thriving in life. And in a number of ways are, helped us mold the governance of how we look at wealth preservation as compared to just wealth transfer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to start maybe somewhere a little bit different, but I've talked to you enough about this. Mm-hmm. I want to start by talking about your wife. I want to talk a little bit about your marriage. So especially as you're talking about just the dynamic of the second marriage and how it really kind of blessed you and opened you up to these new possibilities. Let's talk about, as you look at your marriage in this marriage here, what do you feel like you've done that you guys have done really, really well?
Yeah, I think that first and foremost, well, one of the things that Lynn, my lovely bride, there was just different phrasing she would use. We want to be focused on the primary relationship. So even as we came together as a blended family, raising Jessica and Matthew, it was really still about who we were to and for each other. So mm-hmm. I give her tremendous credit in that dynamic. The other component, outgoing personality, big personality, kind of good stuff. But she also said the two shall not become one mark. And so it was really important that we nurtured the voice that she had, the skills and what she could give to the world. And that has been a wonderful flourishing inside our marriage and our relationship. And then individually, Lynn, and this is just a small part, but individually, I came to the realization that candidly, the energy, the effort that I took outside of my first marriage and put into the world, mm-hmm. if I use that energy and keep it inside the house and nurture and love on the primary relationship and the children, that there was a great platform to flourish. And again, different value system, maybe the lack of a value system, very candidly. I mean, it's just, there's different circumstances from childhood and all this other kind of stuff. And even young adulthood, lessons I learned from negative lessons I learned from uncles and stuff like that, that I knew was wrong, but I saw it and I just kind of went with it. So there was a lot of maturation and maturity to take place, but so very grateful for Lynn, the voice that she has, the reason she has, and then some things that I learned and knew I had to do differently.
So let's talk about that. So what mistakes did you make? What did you learn? And be specific as you can on those, what you did and then what you learned from it.
I grew up in a good family. Mom, she told us, as long as you have Jesus, you're rich, there were really good life lessons there. My dad taught me different things about hard work and perseverance and stuff. But then you saw a lot of other things. I mean, both of my parents drank, both of my parents smoked. My dad used a lot of profanity. I mean, he was 43 years old when I was born. So in my life cycle, he was only one generation removed from slavery. And that was all about casting the rod and chastening. So I got chastened often. And it was one of those things I didn't want to do, as I started a family. But being around a couple of uncles that were successful and that, essentially had all the trappings, beautiful wife, family, they had resources. But we were playing basketball my freshman year at one of my uncle's homes. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he and his brother start talking about the chick on the side. And being impressionable, I knew that that was wrong. But there was this other, lackadaisical, divergence from the narrow path that said, well, look, this is what they have, so if I do get married and have family, then maybe you can be promiscuous. And the bottom line is that exactly what I did. And it was horrible. I literally ruined and lost a beautiful family living in New Orleans market, which made it even more challenging. Again, not being from there, in my opinion, my experience, it was quite promiscuous, and it was almost like a badge of honor. And again, being young and impressionable, and horrible, terrible decisions to make. And you know, all these things in hindsight, you know, you hate losing that family and being in divorce. But I admit it, they're my mistakes or my faults, but I learned so much from it. And here's the other thing, just to kind of bring some light on it.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful platform to teach, care, and share, not just with my own family, but with other young people as I encounter them, whether it be in, you know, church settings, Bible study settings, mentoring settings, working with First Tee Youth, things of that nature. First Tee program. First Tee is a program in golf that teaches the values of golf to young people that otherwise would not have access to the game. So there's so many different things that as we've walked through this thing called life, making horrible, really, I mean, literally knowing mistakes, not mistakes, knowing errors. I mean, I knew what I was doing. And chose to do it anyway. And so those were things that really just decimated what was otherwise, and could very well have been a good family life. However, there's so many other things that I learned and was exposed to, moving away from the New Orleans market, re-educating, getting an accounting degree, being exposed to entrepreneurial activities, and then eventually, you know, buying my first home, but discovering the real estate appraisal, and then going into an entrepreneurial life that otherwise would not have happened. And other individuals I would have had I've had the opportunity to engage in on multiple continents for that matter.
Yeah.
So, you know, we think, you know, cause and effect, but the subsequent resulting dynamics and even being in a posture, Eric, for us to have met and have a platform to care and share and see what you do touching lives with the idea of ROI turned differently is life-giving to me. And I thank you so much for the opportunity just to be here to care and share and add prayerfully to all the messaging that you already put out.
Well, thank you for that. And we're glad, like I said, I'm glad you're here. We're gonna take a little bit of a left turn, but you've kind of gone there. So I've got to imagine that as you're walking through the divorce and then, you know, meeting Lynn and you know, family and all this dynamic, everything that you've been describing, there are a lot of ups and downs and kind of things through that.
Sure.
Pretty dark moments that you're sitting inside of, like, where's God in the middle of this? You know, what was God teaching you inside of those moments, and what has kind of come up for you now on where you are and your transition of learning to trust him and things like that? And if you've got a couple specific stories or examples, I'd love to hear those.
Yeah. It's this kind of thing where it should just be common sense. And, you know, through association relationships, some things just, they just aren't. But it took maturation moments to realize once that I got the separation petition in the mail and, you know, I wanted to have my family, but I wasn't doing the right things to keep the family. And it got to the point where I realized that the only reason that I didn't or wasn't going to be able to maintain my family, sitting down in a chair, literally crying, because this event was now occurring. Mm-hmm. And it was my fault. I had to own the circumstances that brought me to that moment. No one else did it to me. And trust me, prior to that moment, there was a lot of finger pointing, a lot of blame. It was everybody else but me. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this to me? Why, you know, your mom is the one that's telling you that you should do this. Why are you listening to her? And all that was excuses. Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing. Taking that knowledge and that presence, and I think even deeper, the realization that our Lord is always watching. We don't get to hide. None of that is even remotely possible. And so the culmination of those two things in that young demo, I was probably just right at 28, something like that, really crushing the circumstances that were taking place, the idea that I was going to be divorced, not be with my kids, and be able to be around them and at their young, tender ages, but that it was my fault. And now I could own it. And from that moment, go forward, making decisions differently. It took practice. It wasn't like automatically a switch went off, but it certainly was different than how I behaved and how I thought before that time. And it was a hard realization, but it was the best one that it could actually take place amongst all those tears and just really being in a place where I wish I hadn't put myself.
Mm-hmm. But as you look at it today, I'd be curious to know, like, what you're in a much better place today. You and Lynn have a family. I mean, you were talking about this generational abundance that you're building inside of what you're doing. Yeah. What is God showing you right now?
Yeah, the main thing is that, and it's kind of like an oxymoron too, because even as we are positioning ourselves to make sure that there's a preservation, that the great, great, great grandchildren will have access to resources for their education, for their productivity in life, for their health. There's the balance of, do I just want to be remembered? I want to make sure they know who I am. Or are we doing it to truly honor the skills, talents that have been bestowed inside of us? So it's a balance. It is leaning more towards just being focused on doing good and right, not only for our family, but for those that can have access to the preservation of resources to one. Well, mainly for us, the governance is three things: productivity in life, health, and education, where we can actually extend that. That's the gift as well, as compared to look at what I created so that you could have that. That ego, the id, all of that continues to get compressed as I speak it and recognize it for what it is, and just focus on the good that can be done with the gifts and skills that we're blessed to have now, grow, and certainly be in a situation where we gain more knowledge to be able to apply in a better way going forward. I hope that helps.
No. That makes a lot of sense. Let's talk a little bit about your business. What are you most proud of that you've been able to create inside of your business now?
More than anything else is really just being in a posture where that divine intervention moment of seeing and understanding the real estate appraisal and how it actually serves as an instrument for a lending entity to know that there is enough equity there to protect those resources should a foreclosure or default occur. Now, again, these are terms and understanding things that became much, much broader and deeper over time. But valuation for me is very, very different than just three comparables. That's what the house is worth, especially in the investing space. Fortunately, a wealth of my engagement early on was with real estate investors. You know, I was doing appraisals for loan officers. And I mean, I went from making $350 to $650 because investors needed income statements. They needed rental comparables, all that kind of stuff. So it's, you know, it's a little bit more value. And I was really excited about earning more for the work that I was doing. But I saw at the closing table, the investors, none of their checks had three digits on it. Trust me.
Yeah.
And so that's when I realized that two things. One, that there was a broader dynamic of how real estate actually worked and the profits that can be made from it. But two, that the work that I was doing in this valuation space was really key to the success of those investors. And that was one thing. I didn't have to rely on anyone to tell me I was doing that work. All the other agents, realtors, investors, they were coming to me for that knowledge. And it got to a point where I was helping initially real estate investors to walk away from deals, not do deals, or look at a transaction differently because of the value add given to them. So this superpower is one that it truly is divine intervention. And it's one that I just wake up and love doing and can see. I was having a conversation with one of our clients at Investor Comps today, person that's in the Georgia market and is looking at properties in Middle Georgia, and basically had three or four of them, and guiding them through why each of them is different, based not just based on location, not just based on rental income, not just based on the conditions of the property, but a conglomeration of those things as it applies to each one. As a result, they're in a much better place in terms of determining what is their acquisition point on those assets and where they know that they're going to expand their margins for good success. That's the thing that really gets me excited each and every time I get to look at a new transaction. Now, I'm very focused in the single family residential space, have some skills that are able to apply for market area analysis on multifamily, out of ground self-storage, things of that nature, strip malls, things of that, all those little other components that we can add value to when it comes to market area analysis, but really honed in for good success in terms of small multifamily and single family affordable homes that really continue to churn, provide appreciation, excellent tax benefits, either as a private lender or if you're holding those assets to build your portfolio. Those are the things that I just get so excited about. And with the advent and the platform Investor Comps, we're able to serve everybody in all the major market areas across the country. It's more than I could have ever dreamed of in terms of having a platform to serve and see good success for others.
Yeah, I know that you're definitely working in your passion, but let's be honest, and it's part of what the show's about. It hadn't probably always been rosy. Tell us a couple of mistakes you made along the way that helped you shift and learn to really get dialed into where you are right now.
Yeah, I can go back to the very first deal. that one was unique in that I was just burgeoning as an investor. So someone else found the deal. I did what was referred to as I was a straw buyer. I brought my credit to the table so that we could actually get the financing on the transaction. And then the person that was the deal operator was providing the Section 8 monthly income to me so I could clear the mortgage. And, you pay your mortgage on the first of the month. And so when that wasn't happening until like the third or fourth or fifth, I was like, someone else gave me guidance, one, to get out of that situation by just taking the title to the Section 8 office, and then I could have those resources come directly to me. Wasn't necessarily taking the operator out of the transaction, but was making sure that I could be accountable in a fashion. And that was challenging and hard, and I'm just grateful for the gifts of someone providing that knowledge to me. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it could have turned out uniquely and distinctly different. One of the other unique challenges I had was probably about, I began appraising in 99. I launched my appraisal firm in 2000. This goes all the way to 2011. We'd already started doing virtual investing. I was working on a property in the Fox Park community of St. Louis. And typical thing, foreclosure, person had already been inside, done a lot of rehab, and then they didn't have enough resources to finish the renovation, so it foreclosed. Got it at a tremendous discount, went in and started right away, finishing the work that was done. And then there was this need to have permits for different type of architectural dynamics on the exterior of the home because of this historic neighborhood. And what was supposed to be get in, get the deal done and move on, wound up being like 14 months. Fortunately, it was an equity deal, so we didn't have any interest payments to make along the way, but it certainly took much, much more time, many more trips from where I lived at the time in Georgia, Atlanta, to St. Louis to walk through the permitting. I mean, it was painful to take what had normally been my own historical experience of doing a flip. I mean, a matter of weeks, maybe a month and a half, something like that. Get on the market, turn around, and you're done. I mean, I'd done projects from St. Petersburg, Florida. I'd done projects in New Jersey. I'd done projects in South Carolina, North Carolina, all over Georgia, Alabama, and nothing. Nothing was the dynamic of this particular transaction. So got through it, but it was painful in terms of the time, energy, the frustration of engaging with the permitting office. Just wish it had turned out. Well, I mean, I learned a lot from it, but and even just, here's the other thing too. I mean, this was an investor that was in Italy, and they were like, well, what's going on, MJ? You keep, you know, you're telling us this circumstance, then there's this circumstance, and now there's this circumstance. When are we going to be able to get this thing on the market? When are we going to be able to sell? So there's the need to communicate, but just some of the struggle of to have to communicate in such a fashion that just wasn't providing the answer that the clients wanted to share, but being vulnerable and transparent was challenging at the very least. So those are just two examples where
from that last one, what's the greatest lesson that you learned from that you carry into what you do today?
Oh, wow. Well, specifically, I automatically know when I'm looking at different market areas to make a determination about if it is a community that's going to have some type of historical dynamics to it that maybe you can't just go in and change the windows. I'm very, very, very keen on those dynamics now, as well as even things when it comes to if in fact there's need for a permit. I was just working on, I have a project right now that as we were acquiring it and utilizing my eye, I could see that through the video that was sent to me from a property in Macon, Georgia, that they closed off the staircase going to the basement and basically put in a couple of brackets to bring and support the weight of what was now the expanded kitchen over top of the staircase. So all the bells and whistles went off in terms of permitting and what will we have to do to make sure that that renovation was consistent with the building code when it came time to do a home inspection on that property. So those lessons from that St. Louis, it pays forward in a number of different ways now as we're actively doing transactions in 2023.
That's cool. That's cool. You had the unique experience of blending and bringing two families together.
Yeah.
In walking through that experience, what has been your greatest joy? What's something that you're proud of that you and Lynn have done in blending those two families together?
Yeah, I tell you, growing up in a family, mother and dad, one of the things I wanted to be a dad. I wanted to have a family. And nurture and, you know, do the swings in the park and all those things that are just so life-giving when it comes to being in a family. And again, I threw that away and having the opportunity to come back. I mean, Matthew was 7 years old and I was 42, 41. And so we're talking second grade, man. And so there was that whole deep prayer. It's like, Lord, you know, is this really where I'm supposed to be? Is this what I'm going to go through? So there was a great reward in having missed the dynamic of being with my family, raising my own children, but then basically embracing and loving these two new beautiful lives and nurturing them, change and molded me in a very, very unique and different way.
Could you try
I'm
again?
So sorry. I'm so sorry. Siri is just,
yeah, no, she's interested in the conversation.
She's interested in the conversation, exactly. So that was, you know, what it was to actually bond as a family, to see the way that Lynn embraced my children and was interested in their growth, going to college, graduating from college, going to dental school, we traveled all the way to Japan when my son was in the Air Force to meet our first grandson. Having the gift and blessing to do that together. You know, she's Gigi, even though, you know, they're extended family to her. So more than we could have ever asked for in terms of the opportunity to bring those two families together. It still have been challenging. I mean, there was the need to manage child support that was going to the children until they finished high school and stuff like that. You know, my youngest daughter was, I think, 9 when we were coming together as a family. So that was a period of time engaging with, you know, with the former spouse. That's a dynamic. And fortunately for us, because we're reasonable and just want to live life and see others flourish, there weren't the tensions or certainly the arguments or the disagreements that come. In some circumstances, all of us were able to flourish in as meaningful and positive and the best way that we possibly could. Wasn't always easy, you know, challenging conversation when it's time to cut off support, you know, you got to send a letter. I mean, is like, this is going away and this is why, and this is the timing of it. But, you know, you work through those dynamics, especially because there's still college to come. So you're still right there supporting that part of your child's life as well. You're not just wiping them off the books, that type of thing.
When you look at the pleasure that you've had to kind of build this multi-generational plan that you've been thinking and putting together, what are you most excited about inside of that? Is it the generational component of it, or what?
I describe it this way. Have read some good books, been introduced to some really wonderful people, and not having much or even thinking about what would be passed on other than insurance proceeds, as it was with my dad when he passed on, blessed to still have my mom, 82 years young. Yeah. But then, what would that look like for me and for my family? And it started to take shape as we started building a real estate portfolio. And one of the things we did, utilizing trust and things of that nature, we basically looked at how we could make sure that these things were passed on appropriately. But reading Howell and York's book, Entrusted, Building a Legacy That Lasts, we realized that we didn't want to just be in a posture where we designated, this house, that house would go to a different family member because they could just sell it off and all that hard work would go away. Why wouldn't we want to do something that would be far more sustainable, that would provide from generation to generation to generation? So we went away from just making different offspring and grandchildren beneficiaries and doing different entity structures so that the proceeds and the good income that comes from all of these assets, many that are either paid off or working towards being paid off, releasing the leverage, that there would be a substantial means to, through proper management, grow not only producing interest income, but grow the principal as well over time. So that was the realization. The challenging part was conveying that thought process. And it's like, what do you mean I'm not getting mine? I'm like, well, you have access. We could provide, as York puts, kindling for your good success. We'll teach you how to fish as compared to just giving you fish. Mm-hmm. And so those things are challenging and have been. They still are, based on which offspring you're talking on any given day.
Definitely. Hey, Mark, we're running to the end of our time here. Is there anything you did not get to share today that I didn't ask that you wanted to make sure that the audience got to hear from you before we kind of wrap things up?
Really what I want to pour into the world is helping individuals know, whether they're, practice professionals, high W-2 earners, blue collar retirees, that your good, hard earned income, the things that you have worked so hard for and want to sustain, can grow through the advent of being engaged in real estate. But it's that valuation first approach that's so, so very, very important. You want to know that as you're deploying capital or working in real estate transactions, that you're going to make a profit as you begin to walk in that transaction. You're not waiting for the sale to have good success. And it's been my joy, my gift, if anything else, to guide and answer those questions, support individuals that are uncertain, either in the deals they're already in, the ones that they're looking to do, or if they're just getting started. And that's the space where wherever I can be a resource to help protect, guide, and support that group of individuals, however they're earning and or maybe have already earned. That's the space that I really just want to be the best possible servant I can through the work that I've done as a real estate appraiser, through Investor Comps, and then also through our real estate development company, America's Discount Home Deals. We serve so many clients and we get so many unique and different questions. And that's the life-giving part of what we're able to do. I'm grateful for my team members and all that they do from the different time zones that they're in, what they bring to nurture support and really be an asset to our client base, and preferably what will be a growing client base as well.
Mm. So if somebody who's watching or listening wanted to get in touch with you, follow what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So most of my handles are Mark MJ Jackson. Best way is going to be themarkjackson.com. Themarkjackson.com is a great way to reach out, touch bases, schedule a call, even discover more about what we've done and do in real estate.
Mm, fantastic. Fantastic. Last question, MJ, before we go.
Yep.
In 100 years, so 100 years from now, what do you hope your family remembers about you?
Wow. If nothing else, that we were true to our core governance, that we really wanted to see every family member flourish, that they literally could be in a posture where, because of the good work that Gigi and Papa did years ago, they are still able to, not only their parents, but maybe even their grandparents, or, you know, now as a great grandchild, they have the capacity to go to school. If they need help with their health, that there's a way to be able to accomplish that. If they want to go to college, if they want to start a business, there's a means and a way right within the family that was planted for them years and years, 100 years in advance, that still is there for them to participate with, and that they'll want to see that same legacy continue on. That would be great. Other than being a kind person and loving, you know, maybe that my phrasing blessings and joy carries on through generations, but those are little things. But to really make that dash count is really what I'm looking forward to and pressing towards doing.
MJ, thank you so much. It's just been a pleasure.
No, Eric, thank you. Thank you. You're a wonderful host. ROI is a tremendous platform. The millions of lives that you're able to reach is something that has been a result of your hard work and your intentionality. So you're getting good return on that as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Everyone, thank you so much for being with us. We've reached the end of another show. Everyone here, you know, I run an invitation-only program that helps families grow and protect generational abundance for 100+ years. And I do that by exposing the widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that can happen during your lifetime and beyond. So because of that, I've got several tips and examples that can help you grow your wealth by discovering you don't need another business or financial strategy. What you need to do is acknowledge that what you're doing in your living room matters more than what you do in any conference or any boardroom. So I invite you, please connect with us on kingdomroi.org for more information. MJ, it's been a pleasure having you with us today. We will be with you again next time. Take care. God bless. Thank you so much for joining me for the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention podcast. If you're a business owner or a family who recognizes that what you're doing in your family's living room matters more than what you do in the boardroom or advisors' conference rooms, you're open to sharing the ups and downs of the journey and would like to be a guest on the show, then I'd like to invite you to apply by visiting our website, www.kingdomroi.org. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, www.kingdomroi.org, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. This is Eric L. Dunovet, the Kingdom ROI Strategist, signing off. Until next time.